Hi, good day. This is Matt Berkowitz, and along with me is Brian O'Shea and Sam Lewis, and we're here for another edition of Carr Maloney's Class Action COVID Cast, where we have been analyzing different types of class action related claims in light of COVID. A few months ago, we discuss some of the claims we anticipated seeing and some of the risks as well as defenses for claims that could potentially arise for athletic events, particularly with respect to universities. We're now a few months later, and now different states are opening up their venues for concerts and sporting events in limited capacity. And we think that there are some potential claims, COVID-related claims, and class actions that may arise out of that. And there's still, we'll talk about some of those defenses, but I'm going to turn it over to Sam, kind of what we're seeing in terms of what states are allowing now to give us context. So, Sam?
Sure. In terms of venues and public venues, specifically stadiums, concert venues, some states have decided to reopen these facilities at around a 10% capacity, but there are a number of requirements affiliated with attending, specifically proof of negative COVID test within 72 hours, temperature screening, face coverings at all times with the exception of eating and drinking, and socially distant seating. That should be opening soon, but the logistics have yet to be laid out.
Right. And for example, Madison Square Garden is set to reopen of sorts by the end of February, where they're operating, you mentioned 10%, at 10%. So Madison Square Garden holds about 20,000. So the Knicks and Rangers are going to be expecting 2,000 people, obviously. The social distancing, safety measures. Interestingly enough, they're going to sell beverages, which could be a risk. And I'm going to turn it over to Brian because obviously, you know, what are the potential claims that could arise in this context?
Well, I think negligence and gross negligence claims might be the two that immediately come to mind. Plaintiffs who attend events at a venue like Madison Square Garden would likely claim that the facility did not take sufficient measures, such as use of PPE, social distancing, mask requirements, just to name a few examples, or maybe didn't provide adequate supervision to make sure that those requirements were enforced. And as a result of that negligence, I caught coronavirus at your venue for which you were liable.
Okay.
And most likely going to say.
And I'm going to push back on you a little bit on that, going to some of the defenses. And obviously, we're primarily focusing with the attendees or the fans. We're not going to discuss certainly employees. I guess that could be another, and we may weave that in, but that certainly could be a class of plaintiffs, employees of the venues, certainly the athletes, and that's another discussion. But as Sam mentioned, these are most of these are CDC guidelines and state regulations. So we're going to assume that, you know, the requirements are there for the social distancing. The requirements are there for the PPE and the negative test in 72 hours. How would then, assuming those are being followed, can you think of any legitimate, not saying there wouldn't be claims otherwise, but can you think of a legitimate claim that could be brought by a class of plaintiffs? And I assume it could be that, you know what, they weren't, the arena, the stadium, was the venue wasn't following protocol, that fans were, you know, chose not to socially distance, and stadium security or stadium personnel didn't enforce it. I can see that. Do you see other circumstances, Brian, or is that kind of the most common? or Sam, you could take it to either two.
Sure. I mean, I could also envision an argument crafted to argue that there wasn't adequate ventilation. A lot of these venues are indoors. So they could conceivably argue that, you know, this virus spread through the air and the owners and the staff were unaware of it. Obviously, if they craft an argument alleging that it's a quote super spreader event, this is bound to garner media attention and just, you know, attract more potential class members. There's just a lot of issues that could stem from, you know, one of these events. Regardless of whether or not the particular class member contracted COVID, you know, at a grocery store earlier in the earlier in the day or the evening versus attending the event.
The big issue,
and then certainly, go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to say the big issue, regardless of whatever claim or whatever facts are alleged, is and will continue to be causation. And how can you prove that you caught this this virus at this particular venue? And you know, one of the reasons why, in addition to the importance of fan safety and all of that, why these venues are implementing such stringent requirements and may continue to implement them or enforce them even after, you know, hopefully we return to a more normal environment in the next few months, is to show, you know, we are going above and beyond in responding to this. And there's, because of the measures we've taken, there's no way. Not only can you not show that you didn't catch the virus here, but there's no way you can show that we did not respond reasonably.
I'm gonna challenge you on that, but Madison Square Garden's allowing food. I mean, isn't that opening up Pandora's box of sorts, or at least opening, creating a risk? I understand your point about proving the causation and the link, but you know, everybody's safe. I haven't, you know, I'm a plaintiff. I haven't been anywhere. I've done my social distancing. I haven't done anything. And I went to Madison Square Garden and I had a beer and a hot dog, and now suddenly I have COVID.
Well, I think when you go into a venue like that, whether you're going to a baseball game, basketball game, concert, you're going in, even during COVID, this is what I would argue, you're going in with an expectation that people will at least temporarily, whether it's for a minute, whether it's for a few seconds, remove their masks to eat food and consume beverages. So I think you know, no matter what, when you go into a venue, and I think you know, this it may state as much on a waiver or on your ticket that you know, that you receive, you're going in with the understanding that there always is going to be some risk. But you know, as a venue, while we cannot eliminate all risk, we have implemented these measures in order to, again, go above and beyond.
Well, right. And I think that goes to the defenses, which is a good segue, is that there is potentially for jurisdictions that recognize it a contributory negligence defense, that maybe the claimant, plaintiff, class member, they themselves didn't take careful measures themselves. But I think more significant is that assumption, that waiver, and that assumption of the risk for jurisdictions that recognize it, that, you know, it's the same as the fan who goes to a sporting event and not paying attention and gets hit with a baseball or hit with the baseball or a hockey puck, and a foreseeability analysis. In certain cases, plaintiffs in those cases have prevailed. In other cases, they assume the risk by not paying attention and sitting where there was not netting or plexiglass. And I think here, unlike, this is my opinion, I want to get your thoughts, unlike 9 months ago where we knew much less perhaps about the virus and the risks associated, I think by now people are inherently know that there are significant risks in exposure and risks associated with the coronavirus, that I'm undertaking a risk if I so choose to enter a stadium in this day and age. Is that kind of your point, Brian?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you don't know what COVID-19 is and what the risks are at this point, I'm not sure where you've been, but while, we're certainly continuing to learn more about how this virus spreads and works, I think at this point, with all that we've had to do for the last year, it's well understood that even if you have a mask on, even in the best of circumstances, whether you're going to your office, whether you're taking a bus, there's always going to be some assumption of the risk whenever you venture out of your home.
And we're going to quickly. We got 2 minutes left, and I want to just touch on some of the class action defenses, which have been basically constant throughout our discussions over the last several weeks. I'll turn it to Sam first. If you're defending a class, what are your arguments on the Rule 23? Or Brian could jump in, either of you.
I would say that not everybody is similarly situated with one another. It's been proven through the science that COVID affects certain people more so than others. Some people may be asymptomatic, others may be so symptomatic that they either end up in a hospital or pass away. And so that's an issue. I would say, ascertainability. Well, in that case, it's just hard to foresee any damages
I think your point being that the claims may not be common in terms of the damages because people are affected differently by COVID or the situation. And certainly not everybody's going to be exposed by the same person or the same breach of the standard of care in this particular case. I think, Brian, did you want to finish up with any final thoughts on at least defending the class claim?
Yeah, my immediate thoughts were similar to Sam's in terms of ascertainability. I mean, I think potential issue is, how do you limit the class in terms of do you limit it to everyone who was at a hockey game in Madison Square Garden on a specific date, or do you go beyond that, and that can create some difficulty in terms of being able to create a class that can be managed by the court.
All right.
And you could also argue that certain ticket holders that attended the event and then went home and spread COVID to their family that's living at home, can they be part of the class? I mean, it's just very unknown at this point.
Good point. All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this episode. And I want to thank you for joining us. And on behalf of Sam and Brian, have a great day.